Welcome to the Sunday Times Politics Weekly, where we unpack the big political stories of the week. I'm Mike Siluma. Leading our top stories this week, we will be looking at the digital vibes scandal that involves the Minister of Health, Dr. Zweli Mkhize, which has cast a cloud over one of the more respected members of President Cyril Ramaphosa's cabinet. And then after that, we will be going down to Peter Maritzburg to talk about the Jacob Zuma corruption case, finally getting underway in July. But we will be asking if all the speed humps have been removed and whether the case has reached a point of no return. Lastly, we will then take a turn at the State Capture Commission to see what was happening this week, and maybe also looking into the coming week as to what the developments there are likely to be. Let's welcome my guest this week, Mawanda Mashabalala, Sunday Times politics journalist, Sunday Times legal correspondent, Frank Repkin, as well as usual, Sunday Times politics editor, Simonga Gonkeshoba. Welcome to all of you guys.
This aircon is racist.
I've never, ever been a spy.
Can the DBS bank loot?
The problem is that pinky.
I'll never subject myself to whitening.
Order!
I'm listening.
Can you have consistency, Honorable Chair?
Corruption was an Olympic sport. They will always win gold.
This is not a
Shakespeare. Can you please come in?
Point of order.
Shall we start with the big story of the week, the one that is entangling the Health Minister, Dr. Zweli Mkhize? So, 150 million rand contract from the Department of Health is given to an obscure communications company, and Zweli Mkhize ends up fighting for his political life. What's the issue here, Sibonga Gonke?
At the center of this scandal, it's a communications contract that is awarded to a company whose owners are close associates of the Minister of Health. What we know is that this company was brought in the beginning to really run the communication strategy when it comes to the national health insurance. But when we were hit by the pandemic, it seemed as if their scope was then extended. And that is what is at the center of this scandal, Bramike, is that a lot of money was then paid to this company for doing communications work that could easily be done by staff within the department, and government paid millions of monies to this company, and there's no evidence that the company went out to look for to look for companies to tender and follow all the correct processes that are supposed to be followed. So that is the scandal. That is what is at the center of the scandal, and it is a scandal that is really threatening the career of Dr. Zweli Mkhize, someone who was regarded as one of the presidential candidates and someone that I'm sure had presidential ambitions. But this scandal is really threatening to end his career.
He seems to be saying that he variously, at one point he seems to be saying, well, he didn't know they are investigating, and the two people who were running that company, he says that no, they were comrades, not friends. Mawande, would that wash with you?
For me, Bramike, it really doesn't fly. I heard, for instance, he's harping on this issue that he didn't benefit. No one said he benefited. It's his close allies who are known for years, former PAs, people who have been in his circle for the longest of time, who have become more than just allies. In fact, if one were to say, part of the family. So it's really not about him benefiting. It's about him benefiting people unfairly and unduly who have got close links to him. And really, it won't fly, Bramike. And, last week I wrote a piece which related to state capture, that if President Cyril Ramaphosa means what he says is his cleanup campaign, really, at the time I was arguing about people like Deputy Minister David Mahlobo, that it cannot be that you have such people who have all these scandals but continue to enjoy, the good life that comes with being in the cabinet or the executive, as it were. So I believe I have to repeat that in this instance, that people like these, doesn't matter what Zweli Mkhize says, I think right now there is compelling prima facie evidence that there was everything wrong with the Digital Vibes contract, and there must be action, because if it continues in this way, that ANC high-ranking leaders, because of other good that it did somewhere, like Zweli Mkhize is highly praised for his handling of the COVID, that is not an excuse enough that when he's engaged in illegalities and alleged corruption, he must get away with it. I think President Ramaphosa must act in this regard once again and hold Minister Zweli Mkhize accountable, so that people can know that in this country, at least if we are to believe President Ramaphosa's own card that he campaigned with to Nasrec and continues to campaign on today as the head of state, is to be believed, we must see action among those who are alleged to have been involved in corruption and all sorts of other illegalities. But that's my take on the issue.
Mm. Yeah. So, okay, does this not once more raise the issue of the extent or perimeters of political accountability? In other words, to say, if you are the political head of an institution or of a department, can whether you can ever get to a point where if things go wrong, you can say, well, I wasn't there. Well, I don't know. I wasn't involved. It's the guys lower down and I'm going to institute disciplinary action.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly what you are seeing as state capture, Bramike. You get people who are accused of wrongdoing. For an example, the former minister, Mr. Msebenzi Zwane, who's the former MEC of Agriculture in the Free State, when he went there, he said, I know nothing. I don't approve anything. I don't handle all those processes. It wasn't me. It was people who report to me. So there is that culture in this country to sort of, because we are in the political office, to then lay the blame or find a scapegoat in a junior official or a senior official, and I think that we should that period should come to an end, and people like Zweli Mkhize must take responsibility for what happened under their watch, and if they don't, then the president has to act, as Mawande was saying. We really need to end that culture of impunity, and if Cyril Ramaphosa is serious about fighting corruption, he should have a discussion with Dr. Zweli Mkhize, if he hasn't had that discussion with him.
Mm. As Mawande was alluding to earlier, that he in some circles he would be seen as one of the good guys in cabinet. Where does that reputation come from? Why would some people see him as one of the good guys in inverted commas?
But Mike, it really a sad end to a political career that he was regarded as one of our best at some point. Zweli Mkhize has a decorated political career, but Mike, he's a former soldier of Umkhonto we Sizwe, and one of the best products of Umkhonto we Sizwe, if I can say that. And he has a very good track record where he comes from, in the province where he comes from, KwaZulu-Natal. He used to be a health MEC there, and then he became a finance MEC, then became a premier, and was very respected in that province. And then during the time where he was leading that province, there wasn't much divisions as we see today. He really led a very solid province of KwaZulu-Natal, both in the ANC and as well as in government. And there were like all government departments, there were scandals, but there were no major scandals during that period where he was at the helm, and in this government was seen as one of the most effective and efficient. And then he moved up. I remember I was still with Business Day while he was still the premier of KwaZulu-Natal, everyone, like political reporters and political commentators, were full of praise for Dr. Mkhize because of the work that he had done in that province, and everyone regarded him as a future national leader. And when this happens, then he comes up and becomes the health minister, and everyone praises him for our response to the pandemic, and all of a sudden is now regarded as one of the presidential candidates, and then this happened. So when people talk about him as being regarded as one of the good guys, it comes with the history of his leadership and where Dr. Mkhize comes from, as I said, it's a really a sad day for people who really regarded him as a possible president candidate.
In your assessment, could he survive this storm?
No. Not right now, Pramike. Not when all the focus is on fighting corruption. Not when there is a Secretary General of the ANC who's accused of corruption, who's fighting back. Not when you have a president at the helm who says he wants to clean up corruption. I don't see him surviving this storm, Pramike. I think Dr. Zweli Mkhize should just lay low, and maybe he will reemerge maybe in 5-10 years' time. But I don't see him surviving this particular storm.
You know, I and Mawande, you might want to come in here. You know, I heard some people saying that look, it's all well and good for us, the concept of saying people must step down as long as you've got a cloud in inverted commas. You know, what then happens if after the investigation you are cleared and you've lost your position? You know, for example, in the case of Kusela Diko, you know, just by way of example, that she was shafted aside because she had a cloud over her, and now the party has cleared her.
Look, Pramak, as for me, really, it's about speeding up the processes that someone who has been asked to step aside or who's suspended from their positions because of serious allegations about them, be it the legal processes, law enforcement, the court processes, or even party processes like disciplinary hearing, the appeals and everything. As you say, I like that you cite a very perfect example for what is my view, the case of Kusela Diko, the suspended spokesperson of the president and the former MEC in Gauteng of Health, Bandile Masuku. This case started last year, around this time, if not around June, July, but it's been more or less a year. And this process really has come to its tail from them being implicated in these allegations of being involved in PPE corruption to them being suspended. Well, Masuku was finally gotten rid of, but Kusela Diko was suspended. They went through their own, there was SIU that stepped in, investigated, came out with decisions. The party itself took disciplinary action, their province suspended them. They appealed to national, and national cleared them. All that happened within a year. And I think it is a fair process that is within what is called natural justice, that you don't prejudice someone, unfairly. So now it is all, of course, I know that probably there are other court processes, but as far as the party is concerned, that process has gone the full distance. And they are now probably free to go back to their positions within the party. And I feel if the ANC were to make sure then that there is consistency in terms of party processes and acting with speed to establish whether people ought to be, gotten rid of or step aside for good until they are cleared. But I think that is a good, example. But it is complicated when it comes to processes outside the party, for instance, like the one faced by the Secretary General, because that one is a process of the courts that has got nothing to do with the ANC. The courts operate in their own way. It is a court role that's got a lot of cases. You know, obviously in the country we have a history of having a huge backlog in terms of the cases. So such processes take quite some time to complete the court processes, as it were. And you see the problem now, the disjuncture will be people like Ismail Khashoggi and others who are going through the court processes will see such processes as unfair to them, because those the ANC has got completely no control of. As I say, they tend to run a very long road than internal processes. So I think then the ANC ought to find a balance in terms of the two processes. Of course, where they have full control in both processes, as they've done with Masuku and Diko, they can act with speed on those ones. But what about those that are being processed in terms of the laws of the country? I think that's where the disjuncture is, as far as I'm concerned, Brahmati.
So, okay, where does the Zweli Mkhize stand politically vis-a-vis the president? Is he, how would you characterize him? Would he be one of his strongest supporters, or would he be kind of the kind of guy hanging in there waiting for his chance to pounce?
Initially, Brahmati, we know that Zweli Mkhize was very instrumental in the decision by the by provincial leaders of the ANC to go and convince the current president to stand as deputy president in 2012. At the time, we were told that they had very good relations. both of them are farmers, and they have something in common to talk about when it comes to such issues. And that is what we were told at the time. In politics, we know, Mike, a week is a long time, and I'm talking about 2012. But when you saw in the leading to Nazareth, Dr. Mkhize had his own campaign. He had a campaign that was running, and there were people who wanted him to be president. Their slogan was Abantu Bathi. I don't know how to translate that to English, but yeah. So he had a campaign, and afterwards, when President Ramaphosa became president, it seemed as if Dr. Mkhize welcomed President Ramaphosa as president, and then they worked together. I was appointed into his cabinet, became a minister of COGTA, and later moved to the Department of Health. So he's someone who has worked with the president, but we know, Pramaik, that in politics, people's ambitions are always put first. So there was also sometime last year word that there might be another campaign, although never made official. There was talk that Zweli Mkhize was one of the people who are being considered, and who may come up if there is a hotly contested leadership battle, that can be considered as some kind of a dead way, as some kind of a compromise, in order to unite the organization in an instance where there is a candidate that is challenging President Ramaphosa, and they are threatening to divide the organization into two. As to whether are they still friends, do they still have lunch together, I wouldn't know, Pramaika. I wouldn't know. I'd be like,
at least they're still in the same cabinet together. You know, that should count for something.
Of course.
All right, let's go to Peter Maritzburg now, the Zuma corruption case. With us is Ufrendi Repkin, who's the Sunday Times legal correspondent. Frenny, Jacob Zuma has made much of Billy Downer's role as prosecutor in this case. You know, he actually telegraphed this thing even before he got to court, that this is what he's going to be asking for, that Billy Downer is unsuited to prosecute his case. For us as lay people, you know, it raises, you know, a very critical question about the workings of the courts. You know, can a prosecutor manipulate a case? Say if they don't particularly like you, or if they like the other person, you know, above you, etc. Is there room in the system for them to single-handedly influence a case?
It's an interesting one. I think what the courts have said over the years, and this has come up before in this matter many times, because the former president has attacked the role played by the National Prosecuting Authority and specifically Billy Downer many times. What matters is whether there's going to be a fair trial or not. That is the ultimate question. And that has been raised before. In this case, in this plea, he has raised a number of issues regarding Billy Downer. None of them are new, as far as I can see. Most of them have been raised before in one way or another. And in the context of this particular plea, it's even more difficult because the plea has been raised in terms of Section 106(1)(h), which is about title to prosecute, which is a different issue under the Criminal Procedure Act, title to prosecutors, about whether you are properly there as a prosecutor. It's not about, it's not supposed to be about bias. When it comes to bias,
or your personal prejudices,
exactly,
as a prosecutor.
When it comes to bias, there is a point of bias where you can, it can result in an unfair trial, and when it gets to that point, then you know, the courts can say that that could render the trial unfair. But that issue has been raised before, by Mr. Zuma in this particular case when he applied for a permanent stay of prosecution. And this is why I just have a feeling that this plea is not going to go very far.
So you don't think that that's gonna wash?
I mean, I'm always reticent about calling things ahead of time. You never can. Really shouldn't. It's probably irresponsible too. But my feeling is, the other thing is that this section 106(1)(h), it's a, the point of it really in the Criminal Procedure Act is when the title to prosecute, it's really, it serves a different function. The point of it is whether the prosecutor is properly appointed as a prosecutor. It's not about bias. It's not meant to be
about. What's on the prosecutor's mind.
Yeah,
it's but more about the process of the
appointment. Yeah, no, about the title. So I think it's a long shot by the defense.
Okay, and once the plea has been entered, etc., by the pleas by both Charles and Jacob Zuma, does it mean that the case now cannot be stopped?
So the pleading to the charge is a sign that the case is now properly underway. Even if his special plea fails, he can appeal that, but probably only at the end of the case. There have been times when you can appeal partway through, but it's in very limited circumstances. So I would say that this case is not, this trial is now underway, definitely, yeah.
Okay. And the other, you know, legal issue is whether, because the case has been going on for more than 10 years now, you know, in various forms, you know, spy tapes and this and the other, you know, delaying proceedings. And then at some point it was thrown out and then it was reinstated, you know, that kind of thing. The question that comes up again, you know, for lay people is whether, you know, with the passage of time, the accused can be compromised by the mere fact that the case has been going on for a long time.
So, I mean, generally, in any prosecution, the length of time between the commission of the alleged offence and the trial is important. It's important because a lot of evidence is based on people's memories, and that means that witnesses can forget things. It means that evidence can be compromised. So it's important in that way. It's also important because a person under the Constitution, an accused person, has a right to be tried without an unreasonable delay. That was one of the things that the former president actually raised in his application for a permanent stay. And one of the questions the court had to consider in that case was who was responsible for the delay in this particular case, because there was a very long delay. So in those two respects, it becomes important. I think what you're asking me is about the strength of the state's case given the delay.
Yes.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting, Brahma. I haven't followed, like, the actual evidence and the strength of the state's case. When I became a journalist, it was just before the charges were dropped. Remember when Mokote Dinche dropped the charges? This case has been going on for so long that I've only now just started looking at the indictment. I can't speak with much authority on how strong the case is. But from what I've heard, chatting to people, is that the case is mostly based on paper. So the issue of memory and witnesses is not as big an issue in this particular prosecution as it could be in many others. But that's one of the things we'll have to wait to see during the course of the. Also, we must remember that, you know, the state always has the burden to prove, and they must prove beyond reasonable doubt, and that is the right of every accused person. Mm-hmm. And it's always the burden of the state to do that.
Okay. Shall we go to our last story for the week? And Mawande, you've as usual been watching the goings on at the Zondo Commission. Just very quickly, you know, who were the key players this week?
This week, Pramak, of course, the key players is Malusi Gigaba. There was Dudumeni, a former chairperson of SAA, who, of course, as usual, was full of stunting. You know, she didn't show up, wanting her testimony to be postponed. But, of course, that was not granted. And then she eventually had to testify via, you know, a virtual platform, although she had already made plans to continue with her business as if nothing had happened, to, you know, focus on her family matters, which was rather not shocking given her track record in disregarding the law. She has done it before with Parliament. She has done it before with the State Commission as well, when she revealed an identity of a witness who had been granted anonymity. So it was just typical to me, and being herself, of being you know, an outlaw. So that was basically the highlight for this week for me. The Tudumiani event really took the cake, and it really speaks to the issue we're speaking about, the culture of impunity, because she's behaving in that way, knowing very well that nothing is going to happen to her, as nothing happened in 2018 when she defied the summons of Parliament. Last year, she was charged. The commission laid a criminal complaint. A warning statement was only taken last week. So she feels emboldened to always behave in this manner. She is part of the political elite, which seems to evade the wrath of the law in this country.
This is Kotwa. What was the issue?
I forgot that Zizi Kotwa was once again implicated, not for the first time, by the way, in the State Capture Commission. He was implicated on payments that were made by one Jihan McKay, who was an executive of a company called EOH, which is a tech company. At the time, there was several payments that Mr. McKay made to Mr. Zizi Kotwa, who was at the time the spokesperson, between 2015 up to around 2016, when he was still the national spokesperson of the ANC. So there was all these allegations that were put forth by the forensic investigator, who was testifying that some of these payments were made to Mr. Zizi Kotwa because EOH, through Mr. McKay, wanted to be done favors. For instance, there was an example of a tender that was issued out by Home Affairs, whereby EOH was apparently disqualified, and then they wanted that tender to be collapsed, and they used their proximity to Mr. Zizi Kotwa to have him influence the whole process, and then the tender was eventually cancelled and re-advertised again, starting the whole process from scratch and giving EOH an advantage to have a second bite at the chair. So that was one of the many examples that were made of how business people pay ANC politicians to buy political favor and political influence to influence state contracts.
Yeah. Presumably, the NPA is also watching with keen interest, you know, what is being said there, you know. But unfortunately, we've just about run out of time. I'd like to thank my guests, Smongakonke Shoba, Sunday Times politics editor, Fred Repkin, who's the Sunday Times legal correspondent, as well, of course, as Mawande Mashabalala, Sunday Times political journalist, who always watches the goings-on at the Zondo Commission for us. And by the way, you can catch our podcast on iono.fm, Spotify, Google Podcast, Apple Podcast, or wherever you prefer to get your podcast. Until next time, stay safe, sanitize, wear the mask, and avoid crowded places. My name is Mike Siluma, signing off.